Chapter 28. The Trip to Poland. I never felt the desire to return to Rodzin. I felt even less attracted to the town Rodzin, the Polish country, its culture, and its people. My experiences during the war had strengthened my conviction that Poland was no place for me or any other Jew. In spite of all this, I allowed Jacob to talk me into a trip to Poland. His family had hidden valuables in his hometown of Wartenau, Zawiercie, and he wanted to reclaim them. Two of Bala's brothers were said to have survived there, so I decided to accompany Jacob. I donned my best clothes, a British uniform, and shoes which were three sizes too big. We had received these from the English. It must have been about September 1945. We travelled mostly by train through Czechoslovakia to Poland. The trains were neglected, often without compartment doors, and often occupied by Russian soldiers. One also saw many dubious characters among the passengers, who had let off steam in their own particular way. I remember one scene. Several Russian soldiers were enjoying themselves with a couple of girls in a compartment without a door. Each of the soldiers took his turn covering the doorway with his coat. At night, the lights often went out and luggage would disappear. It was a trip full of adventure. Everywhere we went, we explained that we were travelling to Poland for a family reunion. We repeated this story on the return trip, and Bala's brothers were part of it. After arriving in Wartenau, we were able to retrieve part of the valuables in a somewhat adventurous way, which was not without risk. We soon noticed that the Poles who were living in the former Jewish apartments regarded them and everything in them as their own legally acquired property. Fights would occur when returning Jews tried to reclaim their belongings. Such disputes were usually settled brutally, often ending in murder, and always in favor of the Poles. For them, the best Jews were the ones who did not return. The few Jews left in Wartenau could be counted on one's hand. They lived apart again and were ever fearful, especially when they tried to reclaim their former possessions. As we heard, the situation was the same in all Polish cities. The Poles asserted that hundreds or even thousands of Jews had returned, when actually it was only a few. In their blind hatred of Jews, they saw each Jew as 100 or 1,000. The organized Polish resistance against the Russians was really directed more against the Jews than the Russians. Whenever they stopped buses or trains, they looked for Jews first. I was prepared for almost anything, but the rampant anti-Semitism, especially after all that had happened, surprised even me. I could not imagine that it was going to be so bad. With a heavy heart, I decided to travel to Rodzin. Perhaps by some miracle, some members of my family were still alive. I knew their fate, but maybe there was someone left from the Chevra, a relative or a friend. Finding out was reason enough for me to make the trip. Otherwise, I would never have entertained the idea of returning to Rodzin, especially since I never felt any strong attachment to that town or to that country. The only people I wanted to see were the few decent Poles who had helped us, assuming they were still alive. Perhaps I also wanted to take one last look at the town of my childhood and thus end the memory of a sad chapter in my life. My journey to Rodzin passed in a state of fear, but without incidents. During the long trip, I remembered that I had been on that same train twice before, both times as an Aryan and fearful of my life. Now I travelled as a free man, but again I was afraid. The reason was the same as before. I was born a Jew. In the past, the Nazis had stopped the trains, sorted out the Jews, and killed them. I was the Polish resistance group, Armia Krajowa, AK. This thought filled me with hatred for those people and for that country. Having reached my parents' apartment, I did not have a peaceful minute. All my memories were recalled. The whole tragedy of our family, the news of arrests and deaths, the bitter tears, the worries, the suffering, and the pain were again alive in my mind. No, I could not stay there. After not closing my eyes that night, I went into the town the next morning and could hardly see a friendly face. Aside from the Jews, almost all of the original inhabitants were still there, and they surely did not miss the Jews. Those who had taken over the Jewish shops showed no enthusiasm, even though they had always dreamed of owning these stores and superseding the Jews in the economy. Despite the boycotts, they were not able to compete with us. Even then, after all the changes, they did not seem to be prospering, even though there were no Jews left. Standing in front of the office of the power plant and seeing the steps on which little Sarah had waited for me every day, and remembering how she had held out her thin arms to me, passing the houses of the Gestapo and the house in which my brother had hidden, thinking of my Chevra and entering my parents' home, I found it hard to breathe. I felt as if I were in a cemetery and each house was a monument. I could never live nor laugh there. On the street I met a Pole who had known my father fairly well. He worked in a liquor factory and was wearing one of my father's coats. When I cautiously drew his attention to that fact, without intending to reclaim the coat, he became suspicious and pretended not to know me or remember my father. Finally, he insulted me, using the usual spiteful Polish vocabulary. A special experience was my visit with the technical manager of the power plant, Mr. Domoracki. I knew from the past that he was a vehement anti-Semite, even though he had been employed by Jews. I secretly hoped that his vehement anti-Semitism had been tempered during the war, but that, unfortunately, was not the case. He seemed very surprised to see me alive, since he had not expected that. In my curiosity, I imposed myself upon him by asking questions about Liechtenstein and the imprisoned Jews. Liechtenstein had been the co-owner of the power plant, and Domoracki was an employee. Domoracki had known all these people and must have known all about them, but he repeatedly avoided the subject. Instead, he kept referring to the Polish girl photographer from Warsaw who had helped us, and purportedly was arrested for that reason. To her brother, my companion in Medziezek, had been caught. That is what Domoracki implied, but did not want to discuss. To my question as to whether the girl was still alive, and if so, where she lived, since I now planned to see her, he reacted suspiciously, and said that I would find out soon enough. I wondered whether he really knew anything. I felt very uneasy with that sort of question-and-answer game, and became wary. His words sounded superficial and cloyingly sweet as he tried to convince me that he was glad to see me. In reality, my reappearance did not please him at all, and he rubbed his hands together, seemingly gloating over the Jewish fish which had been trapped in his net. It was obvious to him that I would not stay in Rodzin for any length of time, but he wanted to know exactly how long. Everything seemed to depend on that, perhaps even my life. With all my powers of persuasion, I convinced him that I would stay at least 10 days. I could tell from his face that he was planning my liquidation. He could do it within 10 days, perhaps even sooner. At that moment, I had the same instinct that had saved my life before. I could imagine what was going on in his anti-Semitic mind. My intuition convinced me of his evil intentions. He believed that he had 10 days to carry out his plan. I knew, however, that I would have to leave town the next morning. When I returned to my parents' apartment, I found a few Jews who had returned and were staying temporarily. The news I heard from them was hair-raising. They told me that a new, strictly anti-Semitic organization had been founded. Domoracki, with whom I had just spoken, was of course a member. Under the guise of a resistance group, members of which allegedly were fighting the Russians, this organization had as its primary goal the liquidation of all Jews returning from hiding places or concentration camps. This in order to keep Poland free of Jews after the war. Two Jewish families from Rodzin, the Ponchaks and the Kleinbaums, who survived by hiding on a farm, were the most recent victims of this new anti-Semitic organization. Together with all their relatives, the two families had been shot by the AK. After my conversation with Domoracki, I had no doubt that I was next on their list. By accident, I heard that a Russian truck was leaving for Warsaw at 5 o'clock the next morning, and that paying passengers were being accepted. I inquired about the place of departure and sneaked there in time. About 20 people were in the truck, most of them women who, with their baskets full of food, were going to the big city to trade their wares. Silently and looking unfriendly, I stood in the corner. I did not want to speak to anyone, nor did I wish to be spoken to, so as not to become the subject of conversation as a Jew. The two Russian drivers were drunk as usual. Trying to pass another truck, we ran into a telegraph pole. One woman died immediately. Many others were thrown from the truck and injured. Nothing happened to me, but I was disgusted with that kind of driving. I made my way to the next railway station and travelled by train to Katowice and from there to Wartenau. I had and still have feelings of gratitude, friendship, love and recognition for the very small group of Poles who proved their humanity and compassion toward their tortured Jewish fellow men. I also think about the Poles who helped my friends and me when we were in grave danger. Although their number is less than in other countries, a good number of Poles did risk their lives to save Jews. Today one often hears how rescued Jews pay back their Polish saviors who are now experiencing difficult times. In Israel, some of these almost saintly helpers were immortalized by Yad Vashem on the Street of the Righteous, Tzadikim, in Jerusalem. At the same time, I am disgusted and abhor the many Poles who continue to practice their deep-rooted anti-Semitism. In helpless grief, I think about the many Jews who, after they had jumped off trains or hid in the woods, were robbed, beaten, killed, or denounced, and for the price of a kilogram of bacon or sugar, were turned over to the Gestapo by Poles. I also think about the Jews who were killed shortly after the war and about the pogroms organized against Jews in post-war Poland. After the bestial Nazis, this was the second worst page in history, written by Poles in Poland. Many people of all countries supported the Nazis somewhere and somehow during that time, whether directly or indirectly, with or without intention. In the post-war years, many politicians, chancellors, presidents, party, and social leaders expressed their remorse and regret. On behalf of their people, they asked the victims and survivors for forgiveness. One must wonder why no Polish politician representative of a society or government ever considered it necessary to express regret or ask forgiveness from the Jewish victims and survivors. With great respect and appreciation, I think of the few Poles who extended their help to the Jews in those difficult times. I also understand those Poles who remain passive, fearing for themselves and their families. I can neither forget nor forgive those all too many Poles who helped the Germans to exterminate us. Without their collaboration, quite possibly every third or fourth Jew in Poland might have remained alive. The way in which the Poles make use of the 3 million Jews killed in Poland, according to their needs and interests here, calling them Jewish victims, there Polish martyrs of Nazism and Fascism, is an insult to the dead and the living. Even the last Poles of Jewish origin, who after the war had hoped for friendship, tolerance, and integrity in socialist Poland, were terribly disappointed. Voluntarily or by force, they were forced to leave the country. Those who still had ties to Jewish culture could lean on Judaism and be integrated into a Jewish community outside of Poland. Those who were attached to the Polish people and their culture became refugees all over the world. They usually lost their own values and rarely gained any new ones. Leaving Judaism is hardly easier than being a Jew.